Okay, let's move on to, which returned to 963. Thank you.
963, approve amended application under the multi-unit limited tax exemption program for Hazelwood Plaza located at 222 Northeast 102nd Avenue.
Okay. We already had the presentation. I gave the overview. If anybody has any questions, but otherwise,
okay.
We're
anyone
ready to
have
vote.
Any questions for Commissioner Saltzman or for staff?
Yeah, I have some questions.
Okay.
And if staff could come forward.
Come on up, please.
I appreciate the memo from Dory and the detailed information. So one of the concerns that I have here is about precedent. We awarded a public benefit based on an application that promised to meet 100% affordability, and that application was competitively scored. And now the applicant is asking to scale it back from 100 to 40% affordable units. So to what extent are we setting a precedent? That's my first question, and I'll come back to some others.
Well, actually, there have been other applications who have set this precedent prior to this, not necessarily in the competitive process, and I need to state my name. So I'm Dory Van Bockel, Program Coordinator with the Multi Program. So in fact, we have had a couple of other projects also come back and need to be reevaluated for this particular project. As far as it being part of the competitive cycle, it wouldn't have knocked any other applications out of being qualified or eligible based on what was received at that point. And then we did still review the application, even though the rules have changed for the guidelines of the program have changed since then, as if it still would need to meet those competitive criteria. So it did still exceed the criteria that were
so
there.
Let me just offer an analogy. We in our procurement process, we're always on guard for people that low bid and then come in and through change orders and change circumstances, it becomes more expensive. And let's assume here that the applicant was operating in good faith. But the applicant chose to put an application forward where 100% of the units were affordable. And now the applicant says, because of changed circumstances, they want to back off 60% of that commitment. Separate and apart from how it might have fared in the competitive process back in time, why should we allow someone to be relieved of an obligation they willingly took on to receive a public benefit?
In this particular situation, in looking at the reasons for them coming forward to need to adjust the affordability approved, that they had their lender engaged in their amended application and frankly had determined that the project itself wouldn't be able to move forward with any affordability had we not re-looked at it as a whole new application with a lower amount. During the timeline it took for this project to get up and moving, they didn't have financing secured sufficiently at the point in time when we ask for applications. It's so early in the project development. And they went through a design review process, which came out fairly lengthy in the end. And then when their financing was starting to come together, enough had changed in the market rents and other dynamics with the project itself as a result of the design review, that was the reality that we came up with.
If this particular project came before the Bureau now, today, under our new revolving, our approach that we no longer have a competitive process, we have a, I guess, first come, first serve if you meet certain criteria. Andrea, would this qualify?
It would. It exceeds the minimum affordability threshold criteria. You know, I think that they had other public benefits that they would have been committing to bring to the table around minority contracting. I did just want to reiterate, I think, the point that Dory was making around the change from the open process, the competitive process, and the timing of that, and how that really didn't work for the development cycle around the financing. So we were asking projects to make a certain set of assumptions that then they couldn't follow through on because they were coming in so prematurely without financing, without design review. And that's one of the major reasons why we felt that the program needed to move away from that very structured twice a year competitive open enrollment.
I guess the other question that I have is, if the developer is being asked to be relieved from a substantial obligation that they voluntarily put before us in their application, which is 60% of the units no longer affordable, do we have the right to, for example, extend the affordability covenant to get some other public benefit to replace the one we're losing?
You know, we're in the process of having that conversation currently with the city attorney based on comments and feedback that we heard from city council when we were discussing their proposed program changes.
For example, I mean, our plan is a 10-year covenant. If someone comes back and says change circumstances, mm-hmm. we would have an interest, it seems to me, in having a longer period for the covenant to apply. And was that considered in this set of negotiations?
No, it was not. We are really not actually at the point of clarity with the city attorney around whether statute enables us to go beyond 10 years for any project.
And Andrea, let me just make sure I understand ultimately what the options the developer has here are. If the council turned this request down, what would the developer then do? Simply opt out altogether and go to market rate?
That's most likely, yes.
So we have a bit of a Hobbesian choice here. You're suggesting that if we vote no, we may lose even the 20% affordability that's our minimum threshold for a project like this. If we vote yes, we get the higher amount, which is 40%, and you're persuaded that this is a unique set of circumstances cured in part by the new rules, so it no longer requires this to be a competitive process. Is that correct?
Yes.
Do I understand correctly from what you said that the project has been through design review now?
That is our understanding, yes.
And that resulted in some of the design changes that are mentioned in the memorandum?
Correct.
And some of those sound to me like they might involve cost increases, but that's understandable. So. Okay, I'm not displeased to hear what the changes they made. They sound good, but I think we ought to do that with our eyes open per yesterday's discussion. So,
is the only change in terms of the benefits they're providing the city the drop to 40% affordability, or are there other parts of the agreement they're modifying?
That was the only change. They're actually still going to build to green building standards and a number of other things that were required as part of the approval when they first applied.
So the one, if the Bureau recommends that we support this, and if the commissioner in charge recommends, I'm going to support it. But I do want to make sure you have a robust toolkit going forward so that if a developer seeks a modification after you've granted a public benefit, you have the right to capture some more value at the back end through extending the 10-year covenant or whatever you deem appropriate. Because I think we have to always be looking at this sort of balancing. In this instance, we're still well above the 20% floor of affordable housing that we require. And you've indicated that this would be an eligible project under the new rules and still would have competed favorably under the old rules. So those are the unique circumstances which will allow me to support your request.
Thanks. Any other questions? Then does anyone want to speak on this item?
We have Mr. Lightning signed up.
Okay. Thank you both. Thank you. Come on up, Lightning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. Basically, the concerns that Commissioner Fish brought up on starting out at the 100% and then going through the design process, and you've made some major changes to the overall unit mix from the two bedrooms down to more ones, and also going to the two buildings. The only concern I have on here is that obviously you're still within the 20% guidelines of the affordable housing at the 60% MFI. So again, looking from the public good, I think it appears to me that maybe there was kind of a time delay to the developers over this project for whatever reason that was, what the reason really is. And one of the concerns I noticed here is that some of the neighbors kind of made statements that they don't want this kind of to be the poor apartments or developed for the poor and have more of a mixed type tenant base in there. So again, you're meeting all those requirements. And again, I guess it's like, yes, I agree with this being approved, but also having a good understanding also with the developers that with the approval, if you don't remain in compliance, then what's going to happen? And to have that very clear up front on where that will go from here. So if you do opt out in 3 years of this, exactly what are going to be the penalties for doing that? Because, again, you're staying within that 20%, so I don't have an issue. You should absolutely be part of the MOLT program. And that was my main concern. It's just what would happen if they don't remain in compliance after the fact, and to make that very clear up front, because it seems to me from the 100% down to the 40%, it wasn't really made that clear up front. And I think that needs to change and be looked at very close. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners. Charles Johnson, and I just think it's important that we have local context for 102nd. You know, we're talking about two blocks north of a great MAC stop, except there's a big hole in the MAC stop right now because it's under repair, Burnside and 102nd. And when we have a drop, I didn't even do the math to know exactly how many units we're losing here, but I hope that you will find a way to empower yourselves to wrangle these people back to the table and tell you what their vision is, how they're going to make up, I mean, not contractually, but just morally, make up for this loss of affordable housing. We thought we were going to get it. It's planned. We know that people would have liked to live there. They won't be able to live there now because of these units being at market rate instead of available for subsidy. So when there's a glitch in a developer's plan, I hope that you have not even an official accounting, but just that you write down in your daytime or somewhere, not Hazelwood Properties, but the name of the real people who were caught off guard. Some financial exigency came up, but they shouldn't just be asking for a break. They should be telling the city how they're going to continue to be part of a solution and what they've learned from this experience so that we don't have this crap again. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else? If not, then let's take a roll call vote, please.
Saltzman?
Well, I appreciate the discussion, and I do hearken back to yesterday's work session we had on the cost of affordable housing, and you know, note that one of the issues that came up was how design commission review can increase the cost, and I think this is an example of that, and I think that's something we need to be more cognizant of and find some solutions for. Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fish.
I have some qualms about this approach, but I have great confidence in the PHB team, and we're still getting a public benefit above our minimum. I also, this for me triggers another conversation, which is how we address developer applicants who in midstream at some point breach our agreement and what remedies we have, including can we go back to day one and recover the property taxes as if the exemption should never have been granted. So I hope we develop a more robust set of tools so that the Bureau can both discourage that kind of behavior, and also in an instance like this, negotiate other compensatory public benefit. Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Thank you.